The following program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit AbsoluteLoans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.
You're listening to The Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell. Sponsored by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Now, in the studio, local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome to The Money Hour on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, August 2nd show. I'm your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell. Thank you for taking time to talk money. I'm here to help you build a network, a strong financial blueprint by putting together a network of elite industry professionals every week, sharing their knowledge and expertise to my listeners. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but I'm here to answer any questions or connect you with the guest that I have here in studio today. Please call the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And my lineup for guests in studio today, Jeff Prescott with RE/MAX Metro Realty, preparing your home for sale and how to get multiple offers. Great information for sellers, as well as if you're a buyer out there, you want to hear what the advice for the sellers are. So you definitely want to listen to Jeff's segment. We also have in studio Leslie Hancock with Windermere Real Estate East, here to discuss with me today's real estate market and a lot of the things are happening out in our local market here. And my last guest in studio, Rylan Taniguchi with Keller Williams. How often and why the real estate market moves. We're going to talk about some of the cycles that we're going to see and lots of great information from Rylan. And if you notice in my lineup, we have all realtor experts in studio today. So the topic is real estate. Let's go ahead and start out the show with a little money chat.
Money. Money.
I wanted to talk today about my arena in purchasing and talk a little bit about HELOCs. And HELOCs, it's a home equity line of credit. It's a mortgage that's secured in a second lien position to your home. And a home equity line of credit is into what I want to talk about today is being able to utilize it to purchase your home. And they call it a purchase money second. Now, when we saw the financial crisis and the real estate market tank, a lot of the financing went away. HELOCs or home equity line of credits were the first to go. When it was a purchase money second. Now, when the market, we've seen a lot of recovery in our market, in our local markets, real estate market here, a lot of appreciation that we've seen. And in the future, anticipation is continue to see some appreciation. So they're getting a little more aggressive with some of the finance options that they're lending and bringing things back. And a purchase money second, I think there's a lot of people that don't understand that they're actually available, how they work. And so it's a good way to go in and purchase your home and have the ability to come in with a lower down payment by pulling a second mortgage behind it. Now, with doing a purchase money second, it doesn't matter how you take out your first mortgage. You've got options to utilize that first mortgage on any type of financing that you want to, whether you're looking at a fixed rate or a adjustable rate mortgage. On the second, when there's a purchase money second, so specifically using a home equity line of credit to come behind your first mortgage at the time that you're closing for the purchase of your home, most lenders on the second mortgage are not going to allow anything except for the home equity line of credit versus a fixed rate second mortgage. So it's a mortgage that's going to adjust based on what the prime market is doing. So it's important to understand what those terms are on the second mortgage. Now, maybe if you're doing a minimum down payment option, utilizing a second mortgage, which would be a minimum 10% down. So they're not lending on purchase money seconds with less than a 10% down payment. You might be looking at an interest rate of maybe 2% over prime. So prime currently right now at 3.25%, you'd be looking at an interest rate of 5.25%. But that interest rate is going to move as prime moves. Now, a little bit about second mortgages or a little bit about how prime works. Sometimes it follows what the first mortgage rates are doing. Sometimes it doesn't. Because it follows on prime is based on what they're lending for credit cards and other things to stimulate the economy and to get you to borrow money. So if the Fed's plan works by lowering prime and it increases the ability for people to go out there and borrow and we start to see too much improvement in the economy, prime can actually go up when we're actually seeing first mortgage rates go down. So they don't always go the same. But we haven't seen a change in the prime rate since December 16th of 2008, which is a little bit unusual what we've seen in the history of prime. A lot of times you can see prime increase maybe, you know, maybe on a monthly basis. It really just depends, again, on what's going on in the economy. So you just want to be aware when you're utilizing that, that you understand how the terms and how that works. That if with a purchase money second, you're not seeing that it's a fixed rate mortgage. So reasons you would use a purchase money second, again, just to come in with a lower down payment. For those of you that understand mortgage insurance, when you're coming in with a less than a 20% down payment, you have to pay PMI or private mortgage insurance unless you come in with an alternative way to avoid that. This is one of those alternative ways to avoid it. It's called an 80-10-10. So you'd be taking out a first mortgage at 80% of the purchase price. That way, it's as if you had a 20% down payment. But if you only had a 10% down, that means you're short another 10%. That's where the second mortgage comes in. That's why they call it an 80-10-10. 80% first mortgage of the price, 10% second mortgage, and then your 10% down payment. So on a $300,000 loan, you'd have a first at $240,000 and a second at $30,000. Now, if we look at the payment, not counting taxes or insurance, total payment would be maybe $1,310 a month, and that's assuming a 5.25% home equity line of credit for that second mortgage and just estimating 4.25% for interest rates on the first. Again, I'm not quoting rates today. There's a lot of different factors. And depending on what day it is, it's going to depend on what the rate is. But just for example purposes only. So $1,310, not including taxes and insurance. If you were to secure a typical option, which would be a 10% down payment with mortgage insurance, the total payment would be $1,485. So you're looking at a difference of $175 a month. Now, as I said a little bit earlier, with that home equity line of credit on this HELOC, they are interest-only payments, which means they require you to only pay towards interest. The mortgage payment is not going towards anything towards the principal. So if you wanted to make a full principal and interest payment, that would increase the payment by about $35 a month with this example that we're looking at. So it brings the difference down to $140. So that's what the difference is between doing a monthly mortgage insurance versus taking out a purchase money second using a home equity line of credit for your second mortgage. What it really boils down to is your buying power. Because I know we're talking with a lot of clients about securing mortgages so that they can purchase their new home. The challenge is really a buying power where you want to keep your payment and accomplishing the target price that you want in a property. Sometimes those two don't quite match up. So if you've got another $20,000, $30,000 in buying power, it's really going to help you get into a better home and in a better area. So there's the difference of that buying power. Now, another reason you might use an 80-10-10 program or use a second mortgage option is to keep your first mortgage in conforming loan amounts. Now, depending on what area that you're purchasing in, here in all our areas here in the Northwest, a conforming balance, high balance is at $506,000. So to make sure you're staying out of jumbo financing, you can actually pull a second for the difference behind it. So if we were looking again at our 80-10-10, just trying to keep it as simple as possible without having a visual. Going over numbers is a lot of fun without the visual piece of it. But let's keep it simple at a 10% down payment. That would be a purchase price of $632,500. So if you're getting into the jumbo market, number one, you're not able to find financing a lot of the time with less than 20% down. Here you can accomplish it because we're staying out of jumbo loan amounts and we're keeping in with conforming because we're pushing what we need to on the first and then taking the second, the rest of it, and putting it over into the second mortgage. We've also avoided PMI, which I talked about first of all. So we've avoided PMI. Second, we've kept our mortgage in conforming limits, which allows us to come in with a 10% down payment. And then also staying out of jumbo, a lot of times you're going to see better interest rates. Definitely easier qualifying, huge difference in what the credit score requirements are, and no appraisal reviews. The restrictions on appraisal for jumbo loans, a lot different requirements for jumbo financing than if you're able to keep your loan amount in conforming loan amounts. So just a creative way to get out there. Now, just right now, the majority of the time, the maximum that they'll lend on if you have a second mortgage and you're utilizing it to purchase a home is a combined loan loan amount for the two of $750,000. So as always, if you have any questions that you have on my money chat, I've got three awesome guests that are in studio. They're going to give some amazing information on the real estate market, please pick up the phone. Give my show a call at 1-855-400-1150. Again, it's 1-855-400-1150. Or you can always go online to themoneyhour.com, where, of course, I have all my podcasts and the mini segments from my guest in studio. Coming up next on the Money Hour, listing your home for sale is an art. There are important things that you do need to know, and you need to attract the right buyers and attract multiple buyers to get multiple offers. And ultimately, the ending result would be a higher sales price. Jeff Prescott with RE/MAX Metro Realty right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Mortgage fraud has been rampant since 2007. Many folks don't know they have legal rights. Find out if your mortgage loan has wrongdoings and fraud. Magnum Law Group will do a free audit of your loan documents. Facing foreclosure? Need to stop a foreclosure sale? Magnum Law Group can help. We have experts with valuable knowledge, and we get results. Have you decided to short sale your property instead of a foreclosure? Magnum Law Group has the experience to negotiate better and faster for you.
Hi, this is Deborah with Magnum Law Group. Please contact us at 425-454-4300. You can visit our website at www.magnumlawgroup.com or call us at 425-454-4300.
Jeff Prescott has been licensed since 1987. One of his passions is remodeling, repurposing, and extending the useful life of existing homes. He helps clients look for ways to update or replace components of a home while keeping its integrity. Whether a historic craftsman, mid-century rambler, or modern open concept, he advises owners on ways to wisely invest in their properties.
This is Jeff Prescott with RE/MAX Metro Realty. I can be reached at 206-271-2855 or through my website, www.sheltertrends.com. Again, my phone number is 206-271-2855.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, August 2nd show. I'm empowering our community to provide you with opportunities and solutions when it comes to your money. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, but I can assist and answer any questions that you have. Just pick up the phone, give my show a call at 1-855-400-1150. Again, it's 1-855-400-1150 or online at themoneyhour.com. And I can definitely connect you with any guest I have in studio as well. And in studio right now, Jeff Prescott with RE/MAX Metro Realty. In today's market, a lot of sellers have false sense of process of getting top dollar for their homes. Regardless of a seller or a buyer's market, strategy is critical to get top dollar. And if you don't want to leave money on the table, you won't want to miss out on the discussion that I may have with Jeff. Jeff, thank you so much for coming back in studio.
It's nice to be back.
And it's been a little while since I've had a chat with you on
Mike. It has been a while.
Yeah, and you had come over to the east side from Seattle.
I did.
Thanks for crossing that bridge.
It was certainly worth every bit of it.
Yeah, awesome. A little bit about Jeff. Jeff moved here from Portland to Seattle in 1986. He arrived without a job, and a friend suggested getting a real estate license. And he did. A year later, in 1987, he earned Rookie of the Year. Now with RE/MAX Metro, Jeff has over 25 years' experience. He has worked through many economic cycles in his career and committed to making our housing stock increasingly efficiently and with energy use and repurposing existing materials for new uses. Jeff regularly provides consultations for clients on ways to update their home, take advantage of new technologies, and maximize their return on investment. So it's going to be great to have a conversation around sellers. And as I always say, when we specifically talk about sellers, because sometimes we're talking about sellers, sometimes we're talking about buyers. Today, we're going to talk about everything. But right now, for the buyers out there, it's important to hear the advice that you're giving sellers, because in preparing and putting together an offer, it's nice to know what the other side of the table is thinking to strategize as well. So you buyers out there, definitely stay tuned in. So Jeff, let's go ahead and start out with your clients' needs and wants today.
Most of my buyers tend to fall into two categories. One tends to be someone who's looking for a project to do their own.
Uh-huh.
They've heard of me and giving those kinds of things. Or others that want a turnkey, we say. Mm-hmm. Move in ready, all ready to move. And I'm seeing a lot of those types of homes really need to be in pretty perfect condition.
Okay.
To get multiple offers. I've had several instances recently of buyers being involved in multiple offers. And you can walk into a house and kind of get an idea of which ones might generate. And the ones without the red wall, accent wall from the 90s, probably not.
So what other suggestions do you have for the seller on that, to making their home ready so that they're not getting the buyers coming in and going, okay, now this isn't the one?
Right now, I'm working with someone at the end of a six-week process we've been going through to get their house ready for market.
Mm-hmm.
Decluttering, getting rid of the personal items, finding those rooms that need some help, and getting rid of the dogs.
Okay.
And in this case, a short time ago, they did their a lovely kitchen and main powder room remodel.
Mm-hmm.
But the master bath wasn't up to par with the rest of the house.
Okay.
So that was the significant project they had to do besides painting a very lime green bedroom.
Yeah. And I think sometimes as a seller, especially in this market, it can be a little deceiving because everybody knows we're short inventory. We have a lot of buyers, so the demand is high. There's just not enough out there, which means ultimately, if you think about it from a seller's point, it's like, why do I have to do anything? Because there's so many buyers out here. And which is true, your house is most likely going to sell if you've got it on the market, it's going to sell at some point in time. But the question is how long is it going to take, and how much less are you going to get for not doing these improvements? So in this example,
and it's bringing in the competition of people interested. If your house is turnkey, you're going to get more of that small pie of buyer, so to speak, interested in into your home.
And that's the idea, is to get the demand going on your own personal house. So what are some things, Jeff, that a seller might be able to do themselves without having a lot of cost associated?
Well, in the example I'm using right now, this client I'm working with presently, he's doing all of it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
The entire house is getting painted. The entire interior of the house is getting painted. He's replacing two rooms of carpets. He is doing his own bathroom. He did hire a contractor for the countertops, but he's painting. He's laying a tile floor, and it's looking beautiful. A lot of this stuff is not that hard for a homeowner to do with just reasonable amount of ability. As long as you know the right side of a screwdriver, chances are you can do much of this stuff.
Sure. So you're going in, and let's say that you've got a seller that's listening today and is trying to determine what they need to do for their home. Are you going in that initial consultation, Jeff, and looking at the house and making suggestions of what they need to do, maybe estimating what the cost would and letting them know how much more that might return them in a price?
I have a good idea of the basic costs of many of the basic items out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also looking at the client themselves. Do they have the ability? I worked with someone who is elderly and more infirm than others.
Sure.
So clearly that person's going to need to have someone come in to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost has to be factored in as well.
Of course.
When you can do it yourself, that's a huge savings versus someone else. So there's a lot of factors that have to go into making the appropriate advice to the client.
So it's really just going in there and consulting and let them know what they need to do. And then for a seller to be open and listen to what your advice is, because you've been selling real estate for a long time.
I find it's a lot easier often, if they're willing, is let's go look at the house down the block that is for sale.
Yeah.
This is what you're going to be competing against. And this is what the comparison's going to be.
And you know, that's great. I don't know if I was selling my home, I would like to think that, yeah, definitely just walking in and going to their open houses of anything that's on the market near your house would be an amazing thing. Because I think once you get there and you look around, then you can go, okay, I understand why that these are things that I need to do.
And the blinders tend to fall off that my house is the perfect one when you can see a house that's been staged, for example.
Sure.
Then the clutter in your own home starts to, personal items in your own home start to become much more apparent.
Yeah, and go back as a seller, go back to when you were looking at buying a home. You really want to go into the house and imagine that you would be living there. So I think when you can walk into other people's home and think of how can you imagine living here with all these personal items, then it starts to make sense. So really just taking that hat and switching it so that you're understanding where the buyers are coming from. And what about focus? Where do you want to focus the attention on the inside of the house? What are the most important things to put focus on?
My buyers tend to look at kitchens. That's the first thing that we start commenting on. It's gen repair. How are the cabinets, appliances, etc.? We look at the living rooms as well. General upkeep.
Uh-huh.
Master bathrooms are a big deal. And bathrooms in general. It's kind of target first. And then exterior, making sure it's appealing from the street.
Of course, that first impression.
Yes, the front door.
So, Jeff, on the horizon, I know you do a lot of things green and reading out your bio and knowing the clients you work with, because I've worked with you on many clients and you've taken care of many of my clients that I've sent your way. And so what's coming up on the horizon?
Energy efficiencies are still something that I personally try to educate people on.
Mm-hmm.
And some people need more education than others. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's their decision, of course. But I do think that is going to be an impact that's going to be greater as time passes. So that's a common one that I provide.
Uh-huh.
Tankless water tanks is one of my big ones right off. They're easy, generally easy. And I'm a big one to quit heating water 24/7.
Makes total sense. Anything else that you advise when it comes to energy efficient?
I believe we're going to be increasingly we're going to have water runoff on property. I think it's going to be starting with our commercial, but I believe eventually the homeowners are going to be asked to keep water runoff on site if we're going to keep the sound healthy.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of ways to do some of that where to gather the rain runoff of our moderate storms and lessen that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing that even incorporated in some new construction that's going out there. There's some pretty cool places and builders out there that are doing really great stuff about keeping starting to address that issue now.
Okay. So, Jeff, what is the best advice that you have for a listener, a seller that's listening right now, of a mistake that you're seeing that's being made that they're not getting top dollar?
I think still it's the personal stuff that is left inside.
Okay.
When I bring a client in and there's comments being made about the trip photos on the wall.
Uh-huh.
That's telling me we're looking at the house now. We are being distracted by something else.
Okay.
And that's what I really, and these clients I'm working with now did an excellent job of stripping all that wonderful travel memorabilia.
Sure.
Get it boxed up and ready for your next house.
Yes. Want the buyer again to come in and imagine it's their home. 60 seconds. We got to go to break, Jeff. But one quick advice for a buyer that's sitting out there listening to us talk right now. What do they need to do to win in this market?
They need to look at what kind of contingencies they're going to be asking for in their purchase offer.
Okay.
I'm getting buyers who are making some very aggressive offers out there, up to and including waiving financing, which makes me very, very nervous.
Yes.
But waiving their inspections, that makes me nervous as well.
Yep. So biggest advice, understand what your options are.
Yes.
Understand your contingencies. Know in this market, if you want to be competitive with another offer, you may have to waive them, but make sure you understand what you're doing, understand the risk behind that. And that's great advice, Jeff.
Or pay for the inspection up front.
Or pre-inspection. We've talked about that before in studio. And yes, it's a really good way. Never enough time to go over all the information that I like to, especially just talking with Jeff here for you know, just a few minutes. But if you want to talk with them directly, pick up the phone, give my show a call, 1-855-400-1150. Again, it's 1-855-400-1150. Or you can go online at themoneyhour.com and listen to any Jeff's segments that he's had, many here in studio. Jeff, thank you for coming back in. I really appreciate it.
I always appreciate being here as well. Thank you.
Coming up next in the Money Hour, follow up on the predictions on our local real estate market that she made during her last appearance on my show, and a little update on what's happening in our real estate market here in our area. Leslie Hancock with Windermere Real Estate East, right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Mortgage fraud has been rampant since 2007. Many folks don't know they have legal rights. Find out if your mortgage loan has wrongdoings and fraud. Magnum Law Group will do a free audit of your loan documents. Facing foreclosure? Need to stop a foreclosure sale? Magnum Law Group can help. We have experts with valuable knowledge, and we get results. Have you decided to short sale your property instead of a foreclosure? Magnum Law Group has the experience to negotiate better and faster for you.
Hi, this is Deborah with Magnum Law Group. Please contact us at 425-454-4300. You can visit our website at www.magnumlawgroup.com or call us at 425-454-4300.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to The Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, August 2nd show. My goal is to keep you up to date on the latest news and trends in our local economy. Keep me tuned in, and I will keep you informed. If you're hearing my show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast. To talk with any of the guests I have in studio today, you can call into the show at 1-855-400-1150. Again, that's 1-855-400-1150, or online at themoneyhour.com. In studio right now, Leslie Hancock with Windermere Real Estate East, here to discuss what's happening in today's real estate market and how consumers are reacting to the current environment. Leslie, thank you for coming back in.
Thank you, Tina. It's always a privilege.
Thank you. Leslie has been licensed realtor with Windermere Real Estate since 1991 and a managing broker since 1993. She has maintained an annual sales volume of over $30 million, which has kept her in the top 5% of Windermere agents nationwide. As a native of the East Side, Leslie continues to be passionate about her clients and her business, which is the reason that over 95% of her business comes from repeat and referral clients. She has received numerous awards, including being nominated by her clients for Seattle Magazine Five-Star Agent for six consecutive years. Leslie is widely recognized and respected as a leader in the real estate industry. And with that bio, again, no wonder I have you in studio. It's a real pleasure to have you here, and you do so many amazing things, which we'll talk about in another show. But today I'm just going to have you talk about real estate. And let's go ahead and start out. When you were here last in January, you made some predictions and expressed some concerns for the year. How have those turned out? Were they accurate?
Well, thank you for asking, Tina. My predictions in January were that the market this year would mirror very closely the market that we had in 2013, that we would continue to have a fairly strong seller advantage market, certainly within the first two quarters, and that things would even out a bit in the third and fourth quarter, that we would continue to see some solid appreciation. There was quite a range that people were guesstimating, but I think I felt comfortable at about 10%, and that we would continue to see a high demand for housing. I'm not always so lucky, but certainly with those predictions, they turned out to be pretty much right on. Where I was not quite so accurate was with my concerns. And I had two concerns this year. One was rising interest rates.
Yes. And I had that same concern, Leslie. It's been a concern for a few years here.
Exactly. I think everybody thought we were going to have, rates steadily increase this year. And clearly they have not. And and for those of you who may not be watching as closely as we do, interest rates today are approximately 0.38% lower than they were in January, which is amazing. Wonderful news for those of us who like to invest in real estate. The second concern I had was that inventory would not keep up with the demand. And actually, that just recently has changed. And I think I was not able to really predict the amount of new construction that was in the pipeline. And so really, this is very new information, because it's really just been in the last 4 or 5 weeks where we have seen the inventory really peak. And that's there's some good that comes from that.
So do you feel, Leslie, that we're, I mean, we know that we're obviously in a seller's market right now. Do you feel that that can be changing, that we're going to get into more of a buyer's market, or what's your what are you feeling?
Well, you know, this rise in inventory has affected the market. And as I mentioned, it's very new information. It's probably not anything you're going to see you know, in newspapers or here. You know, in talk, you know, at cocktail parties. The inventory is growing at a faster pace than historical seasonality. Mm-hmm. So what that means is we always see inventory kind of in a bell curve that peaks in August. So traditionally, if we go back 40 years, you'll see inventory rise from a low in January to a peak in August and then drop back down. But if we look very carefully at some statistics, specifically the last 5 weeks and then even more so the last 3 months, April through July, we've had 530 new units come on the market, and I'm speaking just homes, not condominiums. That is a 46% increase relative to the inventory we've had, because it's been so low. If we take the last 10 years, 2004 to 2013, and we look at, you know, what kind of rise occurred during that time, on average, it's 11%.
Okay.
So the difference between 11% and a 46% rise, 35%, is really significant.
Yeah. So how are your buyers reacting to this news?
Well, honestly, I don't think too many of them are even aware of it. So many buyers this spring kind of just dropped out of the market.
Yep.
They had got so discouraged from competing in multiple offer scenarios, and I think they just were tired of the game.
Sure.
And I honestly think
that... Yeah, we saw a lot of that with our, you know, clients. I mean, normally you see people that are turning around and purchasing and maybe 3 months after approval going up to 6+ months.
Right, exactly. So I think that whether it's intentional or not, you know, this may just kind of be off their radar.
Yeah.
And, but certainly any buyer that I'm talking to now, I'm saying, look, money is cheap.
Yes.
And the inventory is there.
Mm-hmm.
And you are, certainly on the east side, it may be different in Seattle, but on the east side, you're not necessarily going to be in a multiple offer scenario anymore.
So, Leslie, with this potential shift in the marketplace, what should sellers be thinking about? Or what worries should they have?
Well, I think they need to be really strategic in terms of prepping their house and pricing in particular.
Mm-hmm.
There's a completely new strategy. I had a really interesting conversation with an agent. I was doing a market analysis earlier this week for a home in Klahani. Klahani is a master plan community on the Sammamish Plateau, and the homes range in there from about 400 to 800,000. And as I was looking at the four comparable sold properties, and in conversations with those agents, they had all had between 4 and 6 offers, and on average had sold 5% over list price.
Yeah.
When I spoke with the two agents who had homes that were pending, so they had gone on the market after the middle of June, They had anticipated multiple offers and had, you know, listed on a Thursday, had open houses over the weekend, and set a review of offer date for the following Tuesday, which is kind of the routine. And they had one offer.
Really?
Both of them had
right
just one
same.
Offer in a highly desirable community that has just been so hot. And both of them were shocked and surprised, and the sellers were shocked and surprised and disappointed. And one of the agent had actually strategically underpriced.
Now, do they price? I was going to say, do they want to see? And I would always wondering maybe if they priced high, but they strategically underpriced.
No, yeah. Some agents, their strategy is to underprice slightly
To
kind of create
people.
The demand. So then when you just get one offer, yikes. You know, you and as it turns out, they countered above asking price, the sellers did.
Yeah.
And the buyer went for it because the buyer knew that it had been underpriced.
Yeah.
But you can see there's
you know,
a lot of risk there.
That's really interesting that you say that, Leslie, because I, you know, the strategic idea of listing a home a little bit low to get more offers, that seems really, I've always thought, wow, that's a brilliant idea in this multiple offer scenario. But you just really don't, in this environment, you don't know when that market's going to have a shift or when that time's going to be. It could be here and come back. You just don't know. So you, depending on what that the timing has to be right to have that strategy. That's interesting. Now, talking about pricing, Leslie, let's talk a little bit about the AVMs and Zillow. How reliable are those sources when people are going out there and getting, you know, data on as far as what values are for properties?
Sure, good question. So first of all, AVM stands for Automated Value Model. And we see many companies like Realist and Zillow who are providing the consumers with these automated values today. They can be helpful, certainly, but they can also be, you know, pretty misleading. They are based on a kind of a sophisticated algorithm that takes stats like square footage, lot size, bedrooms, baths, assessed value, and past sales in the neighborhood into account. But what they can't calculate into that equation is, say, remodeling that you've done,
yes.
any updates that you've done, because they clearly don't get inside your house
sure.
and see it. They also aren't necessarily looking at amenities that your home or your neighborhood has. For instance, view, which can be a very subjective thing.
Sure.
And even the tax assessor is not necessarily going to give view the value that some buyers will. And also something like a clubhouse, pool, so forth.
So, Leslie, we've got just a minute here before I need to take us to commercial. Can you just give your quick opinion or your quick opinion on pre-inspections?
Sure. So when we're talking about the pre-inspections, there's the pre-inspections that buyers are doing when they're in multiple offer scenarios. But as far as a pre-inspection that a seller might do, this is to perhaps you know, kind of mitigate being in a situation at the 11th hour where they've got some huge issues and a deal might fall apart because of it. So there are definitely some pros and cons. You know, by doing an inspection before you put your house on the market, you don't have any surprises.
Exactly.
But the negatives are that anything you discover, you either have to fix or disclose.
Yeah.
And that can be a long list. And so what I'm recommending to my sellers is not to have a full-blown inspection, but to have either an inspector or a licensed contractor evaluate some of the big things, your roof, your attic, your crawl space. Those are the things that are typically deal killers. Have them look at those, make recommendations, and usually address those items, and then let the little things come up in the buyer's inspection.
Makes total sense. Leslie, thank you so much for coming back in studio. It's always a pleasure to have you here, and can't wait to have you back in the holidays to talk about your nonprofit organization.
Thank you so much, Tina.
Thanks, Leslie. Coming up next in the Money Hour, when and why do you invest in the real estate market? Rylan Taniguchi with Keller Williams in Bothell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW after this short break.
Mortgage fraud has been rampant since 2007. Many folks don't know they have legal rights. Find out if your mortgage loan has wrongdoings and fraud. Magnum Law Group will do a free audit of your loan documents. Facing foreclosure? Need to stop a foreclosure sale? Magnum Law Group can help. We have experts with valuable knowledge, and we get results. Have you decided to short sale your property instead of a foreclosure? Magnum Law Group has the experience to negotiate better and faster for you.
Hi, this is Deborah with Magnum Law Group. Please contact us at 425-454-4300. You can visit our website at www.magnumlawgroup.com or call us at 425-454-4300.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi, I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
Well, before I left my campsite, I was putting out my fire, and out of nowhere, Smokey Bear showed up and hugged me?
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He likes it when people correctly put out their campfires. He's pretty big on wildfire prevention. He's just letting you know you did good with a hug. He's a hugger.
I just got a bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update!
All right, I'm going to let you go now. I've got a lot of ranger stuff to do. There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
This is the Money Hour with your host, Tina Mitchell, on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance expert, Tina Mitchell.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with your host and mortgage expert, Tina Mitchell, right here on 1150 AM KKNW, the Saturday, August 2nd show. I'm committed to providing you the knowledge needed to be successful in every area regarding your finances. Knowledge is power, and that's what you'll receive here from listening to my show. If you're hearing the show at a different time or day, you're listening to a rebroadcast, you can call the show at 1-855-411-50 or go online at themoneyhour.com to discuss anything that we've talked about in studio and to connect with any of my guests. And in studio right now, I have Rylan Taniguchi with Keller Williams in Bothell. And we're going to be talking about real estate cycles and when to invest in the real estate market. Rylan, first time I've had you in studio. I know you've been on other shows and have been asked to be to give your expert opinion on the real estate market and some of the things that you think are happening and what's coming up in the future and the cycles and the trends. So thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me here. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And going a little bit about Rylan. Rylan has been investing in real estate since 2000 and has certified in construction management from the UW. He was flipped over 45 homes and has owned 15 rental properties. And with this, has the experience needed to share with all of you listeners in the real estate market, especially on the investment side. So, Rylan, let's go ahead and start out with talking a little bit about how the real estate market moves in an 18-year cycle.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you this funny story, Tina. The first home I purchased back in 2000, I believe was in Spokane, Washington. It was this little two-bedroom Rambler with energy efficiency. I think it was built in the 80s, something like that. And I remember the mortgage was $550 a month.
Wow.
And I was sweating bullets. I was probably, you would probably have hated me as a customer. I would call my loan officer every single day. How's my loan doing? Do I need to extend this document, blah, blah, blah. That seems like a long time ago, 14 years. And, you know, funny thing is I've never heard of, for 14 years, I've never heard of a single time anybody talk about a real estate cycle. Never heard of it.
Yes.
It's not common knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I was writing a book. It's called The 2020 Club. It's not published yet, but I'm halfway through it right now. And what I was interested in was just going back in the history in the United States and looking at land sales. And turns out that first land sales was in 1800. The first real estate crash happened 18 years after that in 1818, 1836, 1854. There was a little bit of a 15-year cycle from that time that during the Civil War. In 1869, 1888. So it was just interesting pattern back in history. Why did real estate go in these almost exactly an 18-year cycle.
Yeah.
And so I looked at this, and that got me a little curious because nobody, you know, I've been in real estate a very long time, never heard of a cycle. People tell you that's not, there is no cycle. There's no such thing. Blah, blah, blah. You can't really predict markets, you know, things like that. And so I wanted to research this because obviously there hasn't been an 18-year cycle in this century. And but there's been a pretty steady pattern of 18-year cycles. And so what I found out was that there were two exceptions to the 18-year cycle. And it happens, one, if there's a war, which there was, so there was a crash in 1907. And then the crash after that was in 1925. For a real estate crash.
Okay.
And so according to the 18-year cycle theory, then there should have been a crash in 1943. But there was no real estate crash in 1943. And so anyway, in the book, I started researching this. It was an interesting topic. And I found out, well, during war, you know, we had all of our, a lot of our over a million men over in Europe. There was nobody to speculate in real estate back in the 40s.
Sure.
So there was no crash at that time. There was another anomaly in the 18-year cycle pattern. That was in the 70s, right? According to the 18-year cycle pattern, the real estate market goes up and down every 18 years. Well, obviously, that didn't happen in the 70s. In 1973, the real estate market crashed. And in 1979, the real estate, that was a six-year gap. So I studied this. I said, why did that happen, right? So anyway, in that situation, there was a currency collapse. A lot of people don't know this, but there was a Bretton Woods after World War II that was signed. And America became the reserve currency of the world and what was called the gold exchange standard. And in 1973, Nixon took us off the gold exchange standard and as a result of what was called guns and butter. So Vietnam and all the welfare stuff from Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society. All that caused a collapse in the dollar in the 70s. And that was broke up the 18-year cycle. So anyway, the interesting thing was I was doing a lot of research on this topic because it just got, you know, kind of fascinated me. And I found an economist at Berkeley, economist that in it was in 1997 predicted that the next real estate crash would happen in 2008. Right. So when I read this, you know, now hindsight's 2020,
of course,
that's the name of the book, 2020 Club. I read that. I said, OK, how could it be possible that an economist it nailed exactly which date the real estate market would crash. So I just started studying this guy, all the stuff he read, you know, all he wrote. And he did all this just historical analysis, and it was just fascinating.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he predicted that 11 years before it happened. So according to this theory, the next real estate crash would happen in 2025.
Okay.
And but there's a lot of caveats to that. If there's a currency collapse, and as you know, the government's printing a lot of money.
Yes.
There's always that possibility, although I think it's very slim that that would happen. Or a war, right? There's some exceptions to the rule.
Sure.
And then there's definitely signs that you look at. There's a thing in real estate called cap rate compression. When it's getting really hard to get cash flow on your properties, you know, it's a term called cap rate compression. When construction is going like crazy, you know, there's certain signs that you can look at that will point, you know, to a upcoming crash.
Well, I'm excited to your book coming out and definitely being able to share that information with my listeners. So when is the best time to buy real estate, Rylan?
Well, you know, most people would say it's always a good time to buy real estate, but that's not necessarily true. You know, I'm also do a lot of stock trading, and in stocks they have terms that they call a contrarian time to buy stocks, and they have a momentum time to buy. And I think that's a great term to use for real estate as well. And if there is an 18-year cycle, there would be a three-year period in that cycle where it's the best time to buy. And that period is just ended. There's a three-year period where you will, you know, anytime you can buy real estate less than it costs to build, it's called a replacement cost. You always know that that's absolutely the best time to buy. But the other time, the great time to buy is when you can't get financing, when there's no financing available.
And that makes total sense.
It's usually so the good time to buy is usually, you know, inversely related to the amount of financing available.
Sure. And what about when you're talking about, you know, the cost of money? Because we know the cost versus price, it's always better to numbers come out better buying at a lower cost versus a lower price. And so the cost of money is so low right now. You sell real estate. What are you telling your buyers right now when they're looking at getting into the market?
Yeah, there's a great, the way I look at it, unless the currency collapses or unless we get into war, I look at it like there's an 8 to 12 year window where it's going to be pretty good. So okay. I'm pretty conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So I would personally be looking to buy for the next 5 to 6 years.
Okay.
As an investment. It's always, you know, buying for yourself is totally different. You know, you buy a personal residence. You know, there's
you do have a yes.
You can always do that, right?
Exactly.
I'm talking strictly on investments.
Okay.
I think there's about a 5 to 7 window where it, you know, it's a pretty safe bet to buy for that strategy.
Okay.
But you know, I'm not one of those people that will tell everybody to buy all the time.
Sure.
There's going to be a time where I say don't buy because mm-hmm. and you'll know when that happens when there's you said you had an 80-10-10 loan.
Yes.
I guarantee the 80-20 loan will come back where there's zero down.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how lenient the banks are going to get with financing. I mean, we've seen the jumbo arena has gotten a lot more aggressive than they ever. I mean, they were lending quite a few years ago, but now they're lending in a much stronger fashion. And so that was surprising on the jumbo arena. The second mortgage is coming back for the purchase money second. We've got a lot of opportunities for the zero down loans. Where I would get a little worried is when they start coming back with stated income, unless you're self-employed, strong credit with a 20% down payment. I think having an option available for a stated income in for those type of buyers really are market needs. But if they come back with stated for a W-2 income, that's where I'm going to start to get a little worried in regards to how they're lending. So what about the future of the U.S. dollar and how that affects real estate? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the U.S. dollar is a huge effect mm-hmm. on interest rates and a number of things. And it's very, very hard to understand how that works. It's very complicated. America has certain policies, you know. I love this country. We do a lot of great things for the world. We do a lot of foreign aid. Some of the things we do, though, are also very beneficial to us. When we give foreign aid to other countries, we're not just helping them out. We're also taking our U.S. dollars and putting them in their central banks.
Mm-hmm.
So that way our currency is stronger as the de facto world currency. So the thing is that in the currency worlds, right, the euro is really weak. The yen is really weak. China has a strong dependency on the United States because the euro and Japan are very weak as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they need the United States to be, you know, it's one of its top buyers. So anyway, when it comes to the currency, there are tremendous risks with the currency, but it's relative to everything else, right?
Sure.
It's everything's kind of pretty bad right now.
Mm-hmm.
So most likely risk that'll happen is there's a thing called SDR, special drawing rights. That in the future there will be a basket of currencies where they put a little bit of yen, a little bit of dollars, different currencies, euro dollars, and kind of do a blended currency. But the bad thing is that would take us off of the U.S. standard as the U.S. Reserve currency standard,
mm-hmm.
and that would have a wrecking ball effect on interest rates and things like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of information, and in a short period of time to get all the information out, but a wealth of great information. And I just love listening to you talk and educate listeners in some different arenas. And sometimes we talk about now when the real estate market goes completely out of control. What are you advising?
You know, interesting thing is that when real estate goes out of control,
mm-hmm.
right? In history, it's always been followed by a depression, and it's always been preceded by a stock market crash.
Uh-huh.
So usually in a cycle, there's about 2 to 3 stock market crashes, and that stock market crash always leads up to that real estate, you know.
And it's because in employment, I tell people, if you can't guess what real estate is, a lot of people have a lot stronger opinion on what employment is. So the stock market crashes, employment is bad, and it's directly tied to real estate.
Yeah. And, you know, some interesting thing is that if you study, a thing called shorting stocks, and I can't mm-hmm. talk about it because I'm not licensed to talk about that. There's another thing with gold. When stocks and real estate tend to go up, gold prices tend to go way down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some counter cyclical things that you probably need to look at. To have a really well-balanced portfolio.
Okay. So what is your experience with deflation, inflation for the future? What do you see?
Yeah, you know, everybody is assuming that because the government's just out there printing tons
yep.
of money, you know, we have a $150 trillion deficit, everybody's assuming interest rates are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't realize is that America's got a really sneaky thing called we're the reserve currency. What we've done is we've manipulated the way oil is sold.
Okay.
A big thing is America has had a presence in the Middle East because we want to force the Middle East to accept oil in U.S. dollars,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a lot of things that we do as a country to keep our status so we can keep printing all this money without the consequences of high inflation. And, you know, if you look in history, it's actually more likely that we'll end up in deflation. If we go into hyperinflation, mm-hmm. it is more likely that we'll start that process with a deflationary cycle. And so that's really crazy. How do you predict, how do you invest and how do you plan for the future if prices are going to go down, yeah. it's more likely before they go up, right? So, but there are specific strategies. We probably don't have enough time to talk about that today.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have to have you back to go over the specific strategies.
Yeah, there are definitely specific strategies. You got to wait. You got to have kind of plan for both deflation and the possibility of hyperinflation.
Yeah. Well, great information, Ryland. Thank you so much for coming into studio. Definitely have to have you back. And if you want to get contact with Ryland, please pick up the phone. Give the show a call at 1-855-411-50 or go online at themoneyhour.com. And you can re-listen to any of the segments that I've had in studio. And definitely it's been a great show here today. Ryland, again, thank you for coming into studio. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And this is Tina Mitchell, your host and mortgage expert, signing off for the day. Enjoy your Saturday, and I look forward to talking with you next Saturday right here on 1150 AM KKNW.
The preceding program is paid for by Absolute Mortgage, a division of Pinnacle Capital Mortgage Corporation. Absolute Mortgage Company, NMLS number 81395, and Washington CL number 81395, is an equal opportunity housing lender. Tina Mitchell, MLO number 145420, is a licensed loan originator with Absolute Mortgage. Visit AbsoluteLoans.com or call 888-90-HOMES for cost information.